As women, we are constantly bombarded with conflicting messages around food and our body. We're told that we should indulge, we should be carefree, eat what we want, especially around food, but we should also not eat too much, we should count things, we should watch our physiques, watch our figures. Today, my guest, my wonderful former client, Amanda, she is no stranger to the struggle. She grew up in very food-centered culture, and she received her fair share of conflicting messages around both food and fitness, and ultimately her body. Through embracing intuitive eating, Amanda was able to heal her relationship with food and her body. And I'm so excited because today she's going to dig deeper into what that journey looked like for her. We're discussing everything from what it felt like to incorporate gentle nutrition to release some of those food rules, to how working with me one-on-one helped her avoid overwhelm in the process. And if you're new here, welcome. Our mission is to empower women to overcome their need to measure success by the numbers and start owning their strength and confidence from within. What that means to you is we help women with a history of disordered eating and exercise obsession find fierce food freedom and body confidence. We do this through heart-centered, evidence-based, one-on-one and group nutrition counseling that utilizes the fundamental principles of intuitive eating and mindful movement. We also deliver free educational content via social media, our weekly newsletter, and of course, the Fit Friends Happy Hour. So if you want to learn more, we'll put links to all the things in the show notes, but buckle in. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, the podcast where we help you redefine the word fit so you can stop quantifying and start living. I'm your non-diet dietitian, personal trainer, and host, Katie. Join me each week for solo episodes and expert interviews where self-care meets science. Whether you're a group fitness front row diva or just starting out on your wellness journey, whether you choose oat milk or full fat in your latte, all foods, all backgrounds, and all bodies are welcome here as you embark on your non-diet journey. Before we hit record, Amanda and I could talk forever, I feel like. So I said, let's just hit record. Let's start talking because we're going to cover all these things as we go. So, today at the time of this recording, it is the day before Thanksgiving. So just start by telling us who you are, what you do, where did your story with food start?
Sure. I'm Amanda. I am a management consultant, which to the mass public generally translates to a professional generalist, a very fast-paced professional generalist. And my journey with food, I think food has always been, food and I have always had a contentious relationship throughout the course of my upbringing. And a couple years ago, I discovered this thing called intuitive eating and was like, huh, I wonder what that's about. I read the book. I decided it's really hard to uncover and work through food and exercise trauma independently. And I went through various paths to find my community to help me through that. And now I'm on the other side. I think it's a ebb and flow, but I'm certainly identify as an intuitive eater at this point in time.
Yeah. Lots we're going to cover today, talking about those ebbs and flows. And so let's start with start from the beginning. Like, what was food like growing up for you? Was it something that you always struggled with? Let's start with the food piece and then we'll talk about the movement piece.
Yeah. Food was like a central part of my life growing up. I am Jewish, so a lot of our culture revolves around food for different holidays and the very typical Jewish mother stereotype of eat but make sure it'll look perfect was very present in my life, and not only my life, but for generations before me. So it was just passed down, body criticism and food criticism, not unintentionally, just thought it was the normative environment to be quote unquote healthy. So that's what I grew up in. And it's very much mirrors that of the general public that I continue to socialize around. Now I'm lucky in that like my group of friends now as an adult truly of this magical group of women who don't talk about food.
A rarity. Hold on to those friends.
A rarity, yeah. So it's I've been able to cultivate an environment away from that, but that's certainly my roots. Very body critical, very food critical. I have two older brothers, and dinner time was a mad rush to get the helpings before it ran out or before they reached their forks over to your plate. So a lot of lack of consciousness around food.
I think what you just shared too, that almost like that double standard is so common in many cultures as well. This, we're going to feed you food. Food's going to be a focus a lot of the, for a lot of events, a lot of gatherings. But on the flip side, watch what you eat, watch your figure, right? These really conflicting messaging. So on the flip side, then what was movement like for you growing up?
Movement was also a complex relationship. I am naturally very active. That being said, I had an injury at a very young age. I was 4 years old when I had my first knee injury, and then it continued to spiral from there. On and off crutches for the most of my elementary school, a couple surgeries through high school, and still some limited movement to this day. So, exercise was really more about recovery, focused recovery, than it was playtime or enjoyment or competition or stuff like that. I just seemed to always get hurt when I was in the things that typical kids experience exercise through.
That like rehabilitation, and we've talked a lot about that of like, gosh, even as a kid, it wasn't so much play. It was, well, am I gonna get hurt doing this, or is
Right.
this safe? Yeah.
Yeah. So
So
definitely
how,
a tense relationship.
yeah. So how did that evolve through teenage years, post college, into how you're a working adult? Like, how did that ebb and flow? Was I would just, I had a podcast interview before this and she talked about like befores and after, like there's these periods of times in our life where it's like before this. So I'm thinking of like before intuitive eating, after intuitive eating kind of thing. So walk us through like that before.
Yeah. You're saying how did the journey with exercise evolve?
Let's
Is that
start with
what the
like
question?
the food piece. Yeah.
Food piece. Okay.
How did it evolve? Like what between the food and movement piece, like how did you get to this point of embracing intuitive eating, maybe, or even recognizing like stumbling upon that book or
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the story of how I found intuitive eating, and it was
yeah,
actually
please. You're
through
one of the
Insta.
few people who remembers. I feel like so many people I talk to about intuitive eating, they can't really remember or
Oh,
pinpoint
really?
like how they found it, which is so funny.
Oh, it's such a distinct memory for me. I remember where I was standing. Like
Please tell us. Yeah.
so I was on Instagram and I was looking at this girl I'd been following for a while, and she had all of my favorite snack food. She would have Goldfish and Oreos and chocolate covered almonds and all these things that I couldn't have in my house, right? Or like would have for a minute and then throw them all away and stuff like that because I felt like I couldn't control myself. And she would have them in the most appropriate little portions and talk about how she was satisfied and it was why she was eating the things she was eating. And I was like, what is this girl? How do you get like that? Like, I just assume, to be honest, I've assumed that throughout my life, like, oh, it's just you were raised like that. You're raised like that, you were born like that, that's it. Like that's the relationship with food you're gonna have, and
Yeah.
that's it. And then I learned through her account that she was discovered intuitive eating younger, and she was actually in school to become a registered dietitian. So I'm like, oh, okay, you can learn that. And then I ordered the book, and I remember reading the introduction, and that's like where my whole life shifted. I was like, oh, like you don't have to control everything that goes into your body. You don't have to aspire for a certain body type. You can trust your body and be in tune with that and feed it what it needs to be fed and be one instead of these two battling entities, which is what it had always felt like to me. It was like mind versus body. Like, no, you're not hungry. It's like, actually, I am hungry. You have to feed me.
Yeah. How do you remember how old you were or what like time season of
Yeah, it
life
was
it was?
2018.
Okay.
Yeah, I just graduated graduate school. I was about to go on this big road trip between then and when I was starting my job. So it was like 3.5 years ago. And so I remember because I was visiting some friends on this road trip, and I remember calling them and being like, "Hey, just so you know, like I might have some weird like eating things that I'm going to be doing," because I was experimenting with
That's
unconditional
really
permission to
funny.
eat. And at that time, my like fear food was Nutella. And so I would allow myself to have Nutella when I was hungry. And like, that could be at any time in the day. And
Just
I
so
was
you
like, I might
know.
just have a banana with some Nutella
Just
at
so you know,
10 in the morning.
I'm gonna be carrying this jar of Nutella with me. Don't worry about me.
I'll be fine. But I
Oh,
have
that's so
really
funny.
encouraging great friends who are like, "What's this book you're reading? Can I have it?"
Yes, please. I'm curious too, and we've had a lot of conversations, you and I, just about like family dynamic and stepping into this and this ambivalence between intuitive eating and not. It sounds like when you heard this, it was also this, wow, I can rewrite my story. How did that kind of epiphany, if you will, how did that impact kind of other areas of your life? Or did it in that moment, or not really? You don't know.
No, I did. I think I became, I don't know how to really say this, like a preemptive advocate for younger generations. Like
In what ways?
I realized that you can have control over these environments. If you're not comfortable with people commenting on bodies, you can say that. You can say, "You know what? I just don't feel like we need to have this discussion about this person's body or anybody's body for that matter. I'd appreciate if you took that language away from me." And in doing so, if it came down to it, I could protect my nieces in that way. I could protect any young kid that I wish I was. You know what I mean? Like, that would
Goosebumps,
be really
chills.
nice.
Yes.
I never understood you had control over it. It never clicked to me that you could take it and you can make it your own.
Because you've been, we've talked about this too. Like, I feel like you just do such a great job. Have you always been this way, or has it been part of this journey of being able to vocalize? Has that been something that you've had to self-coach and practice of being able to set those boundaries and have those uncomfortable conversations, especially with people who don't get it, who are really stuck in diet culture?
Yeah, that's a hard one because when it comes to I feel statements, I can do that, right? I can say, "I don't feel comfortable having this discussion. I don't think it's right to talk about that person," or "I prefer not to talk about diets," etc. My family knows that I've set that boundary. It was a pretty easy conversation because I framed it as, "I'm going through this, I feel this." Where I still get tripped up on is when people push me into asking, like, "Well, that can't be healthy," or like, "What is it that is so great about giving yourself unconditional permission to eat? If I did that, I would eat the whole supermarket or whatever." It's like, well, I lose that data. I can only talk from the I feel perspective. And that's been, I think, growing up, one, I grew up with a psychologist as a father, so I think that helped. And two, I think growing up in a way that I had to be an advocate for myself physically. "Hey, gym teacher, I can't do that today. That's not a position that's comfortable for my knee, my body." I'm more able to advocate for myself in that way.
Yeah, it felt more natural from the movement side of things because you had to out of just day to day, right? So when you're trying to, yeah, like you said, it's easy when you're saying this is how I feel, this is what I experience, but then it sounds like you've been able to open up some of those conversations for people that now they're becoming a little bit more in depth, or people are curious or open to having more of those discussions, where I think for some people it's like they don't even go there.
Yeah. Well, there are certainly some people that are like, "Okay, I respect that that's a you thing," and they won't talk about their dieting in front of me, or they won't overtly practice those behaviors in a way that impacts me, but they still make I wish I so I think this is my problem, Katie. I want everyone to be an intuitive eater.
And I you want and someone, me both.
I just want someone to have the same epiphany I had when I tell them about intuitive eating. I tell them about the benefits. I tell them about why I don't talk about other people's bodies or my own body or why I don't put diet rules in place, et cetera. Like, I want them to be like, yeah, I want that too. Let me read the book. I want, like, let's all do it together. So I think that's what I struggle with.
Oh my gosh.
So everyone around me responds well. I think where you're hearing my, like, I have struggles with, I think it's because what my struggle is that not everyone is bought in, and I want everyone to be bought in because it is life changing.
Let's talk about that, because I feel that in my bones.
I bet.
First of all, but I think the reality is that there's people, there are people, there will be people who, no matter how much data they have, how much they will stick by that belief that this won't work for me, or this can't work for me, or it's possible for you, but it's not possible for me.
Yeah. I have those people in my life for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how have you been able to navigate that? Or is that something that you're still just like wrapping your head around of like, oh my gosh.
I think I still struggle with it. Yeah. I still struggle with that a lot. I want, I don't know, maybe wait, take a pause here. The question is, because I'm stuck on one person in my mind, and I'm like, what are we, remind me the question. How do you handle?
I feel like
we're doing great.
We do this a lot in general in our sessions. Well, like, hold on, wait.
Bring me back.
We're in a very good place. Where do we start? Where are we going? How do you just handle those situations? So let's talk through just a real life scenario. Maybe there's a certain person that you're thinking of who is, they're stuck and you've told them you want them to embrace it, but they're either not interested or they're against it. Like, how have you been able to take care of yourself in those moments and still keep that relationship fruitful with that person?
I like that you asked, how do you take care of yourself in that? Because I do feel sometimes that when people are like, oh, well, that's very nice, pat on the head, that's a you thing, like, I don't believe in that. It does feel personal to me because this is not just like, oh, I'm trying keto, you should try it. It's a part of my identity at this point, and it feels like a snub in a way.
Mm-hmm. Dismissive.
Yeah. And so how do I deal with that? I try to share my wins. I try to share my information. I have one person in my life that very interested, very supportive, just not, doesn't take things on the same way I do. And so I've shared with them articles, podcasts, things that are more on their level of learning and interest, in the hopes that I'd be lying if I said the hope wasn't eventually that they would buy into intuitive eating, but really it's in the hopes that they can understand the factual nature of it, because that's where I get the most pushback, is the factual nature, because diet culture has brainwashed everyone into thinking, well, eating only 9 hours during the day or eating only high fat, high protein, or whatever it may be, is going to change your life. And that's the healthiest way to go about whatever. And I say healthy in quotes. So just providing them with avenues to learn their own facts rather than me being the carrier of that. And I think eventually.
So giving yourself permission to not have all the answers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I am someone who like blacks out research as soon as I read it. So I'm not the person. Like, I'm like, wow, that was so fascinating. Right. Like, I'm sure you've read Anti-Diet.
Such a good one. Yeah.
All the data in there. I was like, wow. Like every page I was like, wow. And then when I was telling people about the book, I was like, I have to read it.
tongue tied. I don't know. Here you go. Yeah.
Google it.
So giving yourself that permission to not have all the answers, to provide resources when you feel it's appropriate. What's that signal for you to go, okay, I'm finding myself like overstimulated or getting fired up or frustrated? Like, what do you do in those moments to take care of yourself from that perspective? Like, you identify, for example, that person who they're not changing their ways anytime soon. How are you able to move on? Do you find yourself holding on to it?
It's funny because I think at a certain stage in my intuitive eating journey, I would have leaned into unconditional permission to eat in a very non-intuitive way. And then like, see, I can eat all, like, see, like, proving them wrong. I'll show you kind of behavior. At this point, I just am happy with having, I just do my thing. I do feel it. And sometimes I'll just have to leave the conversation or just say, okay, well, we'll circle back to this, or that's not your thing. That's okay. Because I am fragile, as is anyone. And this is something that's important to me. And I don't really love being drilled on it. So if the conversation leads to that way, I just have to step out of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in, what's your opinion on, do you feel that diets are almost like politics in some situations? Like,
it's an interesting,
like, you learn to know who to talk with about it, who's safe, where yeah. you feel comfortable.
Yeah, I actually think that's a pretty good analogy. I mean, there are people, quote unquote, on the other side of the spectrum mm-hmm. that I am comfortable with talking. I'm not comfortable necessarily debating, mm-hmm. but comfortable sharing both perspectives. And then there are ways in which I get connected to my side of the spectrum mm-hmm. through mainly through mm-hmm. social media and through reading and staying attuned to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Shifting gears a little bit, how has learning about intuitive eating, right? Because you read the book before you started working with a dietitian. Mm-hmm. So how did food evolve for you as you started working, as you started living with somebody else? And then I also want to hear about when you got your sweet pup, how that shifted things.
When my world turned upside down. So first part was like growing up working. So it's coincidental that I read the book right before I started my current full-time job after a hiatus of working, right? Because I was in graduate school. I mentioned earlier, I'm a consultant, which at the time meant traveling at least twice a week, sleeping in a hotel three nights a week, eating whatever breakfast they served at whatever hour they did, and rushing around and all of that. So it was a struggle at that time because I didn't have control of exploring the nutrient side of things because I had no control over, I guess I did, I could have. But at that time, I was just adjusting to what this craziness life was mm-hmm. and then just trying to give myself permission to eat when I was hungry and not when I was full and et cetera. So that's really what the start of that journey was like for me. Mm-hmm. When I decided to work with yourself, I was realizing that I just had no idea about any nutrients. Like I read mm-hmm. the book, like I understood the concept of a balanced plate, but I wanted to understand more about like what they did and why you would balance and what you actually need and et cetera. So the last phase of that journey was really about building those nutrients. And in doing so, I was much more connected to my fullness and my satiation. And now I feel like I'm able to be like, okay, what I know I'm going to have this interview with Katie at 1 o'clock. I should eat something beforehand. What will that look like? What's going to sustain me, but it's not overfilling, that won't make me sleepy, et cetera. Like I can think through that in a much more objective way. Whereas before it was very much, I think I've described this to you in the past, like eating was like swirly. It was like everything was just like quick and panicky and like get it in before it's gone, or it's fine, it's bad, it will be gone quickly, or not bad in bad food quality, but like quote unquote bad for you.
Would you agree that it took some time or, right? Because when you initially reached out, yeah, it was more of this, I want to focus on nutrition. But I think as we started working together too, oh, yeah. there were still, because of the season that was, well,
the swirl
cluster of the past few years. Like, would you agree that there were still some food rules and things that popped up where we almost had to pump the brakes a little bit of, well, why are we focusing on this nutrition piece? What were, do you remember what some of those things that came up for? I like how you use that word swirly, because I know exactly what you mean when you
that's
say
that's what it feels like, right? It's just like,
but we kind of like sift through the muck a little bit and then like, okay, pause. We're not going to talk about gentle nutrition right now. We're going to pause. We got to sift through this muck and then we'll come back to it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for checking me on that, because you're absolutely right. I did come to you to talk about gentle nutrition and you were like, yeah, you're not ready yet for that. Let's talk about your food rules. And what I think I had some, I was like leaning way too hard into balanced plate. I remember like not wanting to have any snack or anything that wasn't like carb and protein or carb and fat. And like, I was just like, is this enough fat? Is this balance? Like, and you're like, just, you know, does it, is it filling you? Are you good? Like, just try. I remember one time you told me, I think I was like going to a beach day with my parents. And I was like, I don't have any like balanced foods I can bring with me. And you were like, well, you can just eat the carrots, or you can just eat an apple. Like, you don't need the other part if you don't feel like you need it. And like, you can always find something like that. And I was like, oh,
it was almost,
I feel like I was always stressing.
Yeah. It took a lot, some experimenting, I think, to find that sweet spot, would you say, of, I can incorporate gentle nutrition, but it also checking myself when I'm turning it into another rule or rigidity. But then I think definitely too, I mean, gentle nutrition is an ongoing, intuitive eating is an ongoing thing for everybody, but, or everybody who chooses to come to this side, right?
Which should be everybody.
But
we all started here. Just come on back.
Yeah. Full right. Circle. Right.
Don't you want to live most of your life free of all of it?
Okay, but then also, I think we got to a really good place to where it was safe. It was easy for you to talk about nutrition from a much more neutral lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just said something that is now gone out of my mind, but it brought up, one of the food rules that I had that I think was blocking me from leaning in that I didn't know I had, but I remember you challenging me on the, like, wait, pause. What did you just say? Which was like, I was like, oh, well, I had breakfast at 10. I knew I was hungry at noon, but I waited until 1 because there's no way I could have been hungry 2 hours later. And you're like, why? Like, your body's like, you're hungry, pay attention. So I wanted to mention that. And now I've lost your question. So here we are.
Just how we got to a space where being able to come back to that gentle nutrition felt a lot more neutral. Because do you remember there was even a time where we were going to revisit, you had certain health things came up where we talked about, and it was like, wait, pause. Let's not worry about that right now. We can come back to that at a different time in a few weeks and it'll be okay.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that has given me permission to say, you know what? This is overwhelming to me at this time. Here's the small snippet I'm going to take for this week. And then if I'm feeling more like that is good and I'm ready for the next step, I will take another snippet next week, and then we'll make a habit out of that. I think, and this is similar to how I felt around dieting, which is there's too much information. I have no idea what it's saying. Everyone's saying something different, which is not the way I felt here, but it was just, I think I had been conditioned to be overwhelmed by the information that was in front of me. Like, I'm thinking about, like, there were certain times we were experimenting with like more fiber, more fish oil and like things like that. And I was like, hold on, like, okay, I can have more fish or I can have these little things, but I can't do all of it yet. And giving myself the permission to slow down and take it at my pace has enabled me to make sustainable practices.
Yeah. Instead of taking the full 10 principles, the whole 10 book and going, okay, implementing.
Yeah. That. Downloaded steps, now time to
steps one
deploy.
Through 10 all at once, you were able to recognize where that feeling of having to do it all at once came from and apply it to the gentle nutrition piece of going, hold on. Yes, all these things are important to me. Yes, all these things will help XYZ, but I don't need to do them all at once. It's not going to happen overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That
diet I think we mentality. Took a similar approach to exercise too. It was like, okay, well, you're not going to want to work out all these days of the week. Just do what's right for you. And then you can inch it up when you're stronger and like, go. Oh, okay. Got it.
Oh, okay. Got it. You make it sound so easy. Let's shift there a little bit about your journey with movement, because that was a really important piece when you came to me as well. Like you mentioned, because of your history around movement and fear of getting injured again and moving your body in a way that felt comfortable, but also safe. How has that journey been over the past year, few months or so, I guess?
Yeah. And I'm realizing I forgot to answer your question, which will make sense in a second, about the dog thing, because that has shifted my relationship with exercise. But I'll tell you, so leading up to the time of working with you, I had gone the full spectrum, right? I had gone in elementary school being mostly injured, high school, I was on the tennis team, college, I was rowing, after college, I was working out a whole bunch, but not feeding myself well and not working out for the right reasons. And I was getting injured, et cetera. And then fast forward to before I was working with you, and it was during COVID, I was like, I just can't find the thing that makes me want to be consistent in it. Nothing is, because I have ADD, so I need things that are like short and intense. Mm. That is my personality. It's like quick and to the point, let's go. And so I don't think I ever, like talking about what we said before of like advocating for yourself and feeling comfortable about that in terms of your boundaries, I think the same thing goes for what you actually need. So I had never thought to just be like, well, Katie, I actually need like a 20-minute start to finish program. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do more than that because I don't have the attention span and I don't love wearing shoes, working out, like all these things. Like I just were like, okay, I'm going to ask for this and see what we get out of it. And one thing that I remember you told me was like, well, your mornings can be for you. Like you can take that time, because at the time I was working that crazy busy schedule and you're like, mm-hmm. Well, think about your mornings as your gift to yourself, the time that you're dedicating to yourself. And I was like, okay. And that really helped. And I'll transition now to talking about post you, but really, I think I got Skylar, my dog, when it was I was working with you.
Yeah. It was like, I remember vividly, because it was, we had never talked about a dog or pets at all. And then all of a sudden you're like, sorry, I can't, I think you get cancel or something, like I'm flying or picking up the dog off a plane or something. And I was like, what? Okay.
It was an impulsive decision to get him. And I did pick him up from the airport. So
I was like, whatever brings you joy, fill me in next time, I guess.
Oh God.
But going on the movement piece, right? It took a lot of trial and error. And then mm-hmm. you got a dog. So yeah. Tell us how the dog
uprooted my trial and error things, because my mornings then were dedicated when he was a puppy. My mornings then were about taking him out and making sure that he had the appropriate structure and he had the appropriate playtime. And that was true for the first like 2-3 months of having him. And during that time, I remember, I think we were still working together or doing like little check-ins once a month or something. And during that time I was like, yeah, like my exercise is not really, like I was in a really good place. I was working out consistently, I felt strong. And then the dog happened and I was like, I just don't have time for myself. Like I felt like a new mom, not comparing a dog to a child.
But a new dog mom.
New dog mom for sure. And it
a
was
new
exhausting.
Transition. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, gave myself, I think with the help of you, permission to give myself grace in that moment. And like, this is just, like you said, a new transition. Like, it's okay. You'll start back up when you start back up. And now, mainly, to be honest, most of my exercise is walking him. We go for 2 1-hour walks a day. So it's like a lot of
to say that's a lot. Time. That's it's probably, lot. That's definitely more than when we
yes, no,
first I, met.
I,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's I had shifted. Been walking like most an hour a day when we met as like after work cleansing time. Mm-hmm. If I had the time, otherwise, oh yeah, I bought a treadmill desk. I remember. Yeah. But now, so now that's the bulk of my exercise. And I'm also going through some new orthopedic problems. So I'm again giving myself grace and saying, okay, strengthening is not your journey right now, but you are inadvertently strengthening by walking. So go ahead and do that. And like sometimes if I'm on a meeting, I'll grab my little light dumbbells and give myself a go for that. And like, okay, that's it. That's your full body right now. And I think the one thing I wanted to mention about the dog is I'm motivated to do that. He's a good reminder of what's healthy, right? Because he's just so pure in his needs. He's not distracted by all the noise, right? He's very much like, this is what I need, mom. Give it to
He's a
me.
baby.
He's a baby. Yeah. And he's dogs are just like, this is their whole life. So when I discovered that giving him that movement in the morning helps him throughout the day, therefore helping me throughout the day, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And it became true for myself too, right? Like dedicating that time to get outside, to do walks, to feel my body with each step and to like wake up the achy joints. Like that's become my joyful movement in this phase of my life right now. And I'm into it. Like I actually just got back from a walk right before this call.
What a journey. You've had so many aha moments, I feel like, especially with that movement piece. And it makes me so happy, first of all, just to hear you say that. Like, not that you're having more orthopedic injuries, but to hear you say, I'm going to be okay. This is how I'm navigating. Like, I feel good about how I'm navigating it. And I also know that this can change
Yep.
and being okay with that, having that grace.
Yep. You
What
have
would,
to, right? Like you
yeah.
gotta
So what would you
move with
say to,
it.
do you have any advice for somebody who maybe is struggling to find that consistency, one, because of life, but maybe two, because of just pain and just their body of where it's at right now?
Yeah. I think the three things that are important to me, or maybe they're not three. Let's see what they number out to be.
Hold on, let me count.
Yeah. Find an environment that feels supportive and safe for you. For a while, for me, that was working out two videos in my own living room with no one around me to see how I was modifying, etc. The other thing is, and that can also be like working with someone like yourself who understands exercise and can customize plans for the person who might be struggling, or I think I'm more right now talking about the pain and the orthopedics. So that is the main thing for me. My body is not very consistent in its
The pain, it's not
it, yeah,
predictable.
yeah, it's not predictable. And so consistency means something different for me than it does for a fully able-bodied person. And so creating the environment, surrounding yourself with the right people in that environment, giving yourself grace to redefine what consistency is, and finding that thing that's joyful and mostly pain-free, regardless of your other goals, right? So like keeping that, like
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
if and when I get the clearance to do more concerted exercise, I still want to make time for these walks that I've discovered to be so joyful for me and generally pain-free. Because then what I think would happen, and I haven't been in this position yet, but when that more concerted exercise gets taken away from me, which often it does when you're struggling with orthopedic trauma, you still have your baseline that brings you joy. And I think that's important.
That's really great tip. I love that you've been on this journey to find that. It's
Yeah.
taken a lot of trial and error
It
and a dog getting
Yep.
a having your world flipped upside down to navigate it. But yeah, finding that baseline and redefining consistency. I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Redefining what it looks like to you, what's important to you. Like you said, what is your kind of motivators or what you gather, especially from movement and the eating space,
Yeah.
what matters to you in this moment?
And leaning into what, like the thing I keep, when I'm in these joyful moments, what I think about most is how natural it feels. So trying to tune down the noise so that you can understand what feels naturally joyful for you.
How do you turn down the noise?
That's hard. I think that's also trial and error, right? Like, what is the noise to you? For me, it was diet culture and exercise culture and stepping away from that. And I think in a way, COVID was a gift because I wasn't surrounded by people.
You were a gym goer for a while. You were a class goer for a while there.
Yeah, I was a class goer. Yeah. And to be honest, Katie, like I was in pain during those classes. Like it wasn't joyful.
Yeah, we talked a lot about that and not feeling safe in some situations to talk to the instructor or ask or be in certain spots. Yeah, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, and as someone who is not as able-bodied as my peers, it's a burden to always have to pull someone aside and say, hey, this is what's going on. And not everyone understands it. And sometimes you just don't have the energy for it. And you just want to tune into yourself and tune into what feels right for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that prior to the last few years, I hadn't given myself permission to do that because I was like, well, exercise culture says I had to take this new surfboard yoga class. I just made that up. I've never taken a surfboard yoga class because I know my limits and I even exists. Need them then. Yeah. Oops, sorry. But yeah. So I think it's just understanding where you're comfortable. And then tuning out the noise for dieting, I think that had to do, like, for a while, I was eating while listening to classical music. Like just trying to do anything that enabled me to tune in while I was physically eating. Mm-hmm. That helped a little bit. Taking the 5 breaths before I ate was, I think, the most helpful. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the other thing that I've found I'm leaning more into now is understanding what I'm naturally satiated by and tuning out the noise of what I quote unquote should eat. Like, right?
We've made a lot of combos, I feel like, together of what can we try? Like, I don't know why I always will forever think of you when I think of Chobani flips now.
They're so good. Dessert yogurt. I was so into dessert yogurt for a while. I think that changed my life. I was like, wow, I could have dessert in the middle of the day, but it's this like beautiful yogurt with berries and chocolate. And ooh, it's so good.
Like redefining some of those foods that you enjoy and rediscovering what you enjoy.
Right. And why I enjoy that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the why is important for sustainability because, and that's, I think that is the tie for both the intuitive or the, I'm going to say joyful movement and the joyful eating. Mm-hmm. It's understanding your why and leaning into that because that's the most natural motivator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so unique. It has to be so unique to you and to each person.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked a lot of the challenges, but what would you say right now is the most challenging part of where you're at? Maybe we'll ask you, I'm going to take that back. What was the most challenging part going through it, like through our work together and then this next stage that you're at now?
Oof.
Other than trying to convert everybody to being
honestly, that is my biggest challenge. And no, said differently, and this isn't necessarily the hardest part of the time with you because I actually felt like I had the community when I was with you. But that is the hardest part, is feeling like it's a minority mindset and it's a minority lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's just hard. Right? Because I would love to talk to people about this socially, like, but food is a dangerous thing to talk about because it often comes into, yeah, that was so good, but so bad, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. You're like, no, why'd you have to go there? Stop. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one thing to have our internet friends, internet community, but then it is, like you said, when you step out, unfortunately, into your day to day, the world, whether it's work, home, gosh, so many places. It's just, it's a different language. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So that was that is a continual challenge. I'd say the hardest part in going through the work I did with you was manifesting patience, like we just talked about. I'm a fast and like done. Like I want it done.
Tell me what to do and I'll do it. Yeah.
Right. Like let's just go, which works really well for me professionally. But personally, I could certainly use a little bit more grace in that. And I think even what we're just talking about with the gentle nutrition is a good example of it. Like it was frustrating at the time to say, hey, wait, Amanda, like, I understand you, we want to talk about that, but there's something here that we should dig into. And I say frustrating in like not a like aggravated way, but just like, oh God, Katie, why do you bring that up? Like, I just want to be better now. Like, why, I just want to be done.
Why can't you just sprinkle me with pixie dust and we'll be there?
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Asking the hard questions, doing the hard work. Yeah.
Yeah. And challenging your true beliefs, right? Like, I think we so often, especially around food, food and exercise, we have been conditioned to put out a persona of like, I got this, I'm handling this, I'm good, blah, blah, blah. And it's really like opening the challenge for me was, okay, let's be honest with myself. Let's be honest with Katie and let's follow her lead and let her guide this with me to understand how to get to the goal, because we both know the goal is the same. I might want it yesterday. And she might be like, no, the realistic timeline is not yesterday.
Well, I think what's interesting too is because you had already, like a lot of people come to me not necessarily knowing intuitive eating, but you were very much, oh, I know. So in a sense, you knew all the right things, air quotes, to say.
Yes.
Like, yes, I'm giving myself unconditional permission to eat. Like you knew, you had all the knowledge, but it was, like I said, a lot of trial and error of applying that knowledge to you, applying it to your week, to what was going on and how that all shifted.
Yeah. I think we said at the time, I'm an intellectual intuitive eater, but it has not manifested in my body yet. Mm. Like I feel like I was just like, yes, I know everything. I'm good. I read all the books, but I hadn't lived it in full yet.
I love that you said this part of your identity now though too, because once you learn it, once you do continue to have those positive experiences around food, those new joyful experiences, it really does become something that you can't unlearn.
Right. Well, and I was thinking about the latter half of your question of like, what's challenging moving forward. I think what's continuously challenging for me is body image. Part of that is strength, right? Because I'm limited at this time. And that is a continual storyline throughout my life. So there are times that I'm like, it's frustrating to be in this body right now. And the thing that keeps me centered in it is one, appreciation for those joyful movement experiences, but two, it's appreciation for the joyfulness I've now found in food. And I don't find shame in it. I don't find the swirl. It's much more peaceful and it's much more joyful. Like it's so funny that we're doing this today, because dinner last night and breakfast this morning were both two of my previous fear foods. And I just ate them. I just ate them. And I was like, great. I'm so full. I'm so like satisfied. I'm great. Moving on. Let's go for a walk.
You're going to make me cry, because I just hear the power and just knowing your story and just where it is that you've been. Like you just have no idea how happy that makes me for you to be in this moment, especially to head into the holiday season. Like, now I'm good. And the way you say it too, like you say it with such a lightheartedness that like, let's take a moment to just relish in that. Like, do you hear what yourself right now? Right.
For sure. Well, this season would have been a lot of anxiety for me in the past, for sure. I mean, this is tomorrow's Thanksgiving, right? It's like the biggest meal of the year. And I'm like, cool, let's cook some sides. What are we making? Like, I would have been in a much different headspace prior to this. Mm-hmm. So
you've taken it a step further. Not only is it not stressful, I love hearing that it's joyful. Like it's exciting. It's fun. It's an experience.
And it's a challenge, right? Like there are still things within intuitive eating that I'm working on. I mentioned body image. And then the other thing I'm still continuously working on, as you can tell from my personality, is just slowing down and appreciating the moment. And like, it's just not who I am, but it's essential to the experience of joyful eating. And like, that is also what I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, we're going to have a great meal. And here's your challenge for tomorrow. Like you're going to sit down, you're going to eat whatever you want to eat, but just make sure that you taste it. Make sure that you're there and you're present, not only with your friends and family, but with the nourishment.
Look at you self-coaching already before you even had it. I love it. I love it. What advice would you have? First of all, I can't even thank you enough. This has been so good. I love chatting with you. Could keep talking to you for hours. What advice would you have for somebody who really is on the fence about intuitive eating? Maybe they're like, hey, Amanda, convert me.
I would say the same thing I said earlier about people who challenge me. Read the introduction to the book, to the book Intuitive Eating. I'm telling you, it changed my entire perspective around what food is and how it's ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And I think the other thing is like, if you really tuned in and you really checked in with yourself, like, would you actually think, if you were brand new on this planet, would you think that controlling your food is what brings you happiness and that changing your body is what you're put on this earth to do? Like, no. Do you really feel that this is aligned to what you want to spend your energy doing? I'll say one other thing, Katie. Recently I've been exploring a new interest of mine through podcast media and through reading different books. And I was literally thinking about that this week, how previously I don't think I would have had the mind space to explore something of a new passion that's important to me, because so much of my energy and my anxiety was focused around my food and my body and my exercise. It's like, what would life look like if you alleviated that energy, that the amount of energy that you burn thinking about those topics? What else could you spend that on? That's what I would ask someone who's on the fence.
Mic drop.
And we're done.
That's good. That was so good and so true though. And I just love hearing this all from your mouth, like from your words, just knowing where you've been. And the way you say that, of it's like this, if you're in another space that you couldn't even wrap your head around before, because you, like you said, didn't have the brain space or the capacity.
Yeah. Or even like, there's no food tracking on my phone. There's not, like, my phone is there for like new interesting things. Mm-hmm. Like just everywhere. It's everywhere. You can free up so much
stuff, things, energy. Yeah. So good, Amanda. Okay. I love to finish all episodes like this. So I got to know, other than this conversation and the new blow dryer that I'm going to buy based on what we talked about before, that's the best thing that's happened to my week. What's the best thing that has happened to you this week?
Let's see. Oh, my best friend got engaged this weekend.
Oh, that how was fun. A very nice. Did you know it was going to happen?
I had some clues. I had my spidey senses out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
was really exciting.
We've been
best friends since we were in kindergarten. So it was like new little adventure.
So fun. Well, again, thank you, Amanda, so much for sharing your story, you just speak so well. And again, I could just go on and on about how much I love you and our time together and our conversations. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too. And thank you for everything and for having me. And hopefully we'll continue to have these conversations because I love them too.
Me too.
All right. Thankful for you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.